Miami, 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 Miami. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Heatbeat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas. And with me today is not our producer and co-founder, Brian Goins. I can't locate Brian. Brian sometimes disappears for me. I don't know where my producer and co-founder goes. Sometimes he's just off with the wind doing his own thing, and I'll find out later. But he will edit. He will do the production work at the end. However, in his stead, to my left here on twitch.tv/MIAHeatbeat, the home of all things Miami Heatbeat streaming, including our pre- and post-game show, Hangover Time, hosted by Alphonse Sidney. We have our 2K coach, Frankie.
Edris better.
Idris. His name is Idris, not Edris.
Whatever. Bam better.
On the bottom of the screen, Twitter friend, long time, wanted him on the show, Duncan Smith from Hoops Habit. Duncan, welcome to the program, man. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Happy to do it. Very pleased to be on with you guys today. I'm sure Brian's probably incommunicado because he doesn't want to talk to me or something.
Brian's probably in witness protection at this point. Brian has a lot going on in his life right now. He's on the run. Some stuff's happening in his life. Miami Heat. Yeah, that's deep Miami Heat beat lore. Well, we love you, Brian. You'll get this audio eventually if you're out in the chat. You know, we love you. By the way, shout out to the Twitch chat. You guys have been great, and I'm hammering this home a lot. I mean, you guys are making everything we do possible. We're streaming every single day. We're giving you pods, pre- and post-game shows. We're giving you additional content, and that's just going to increase. We're going to kind of unveil our little Patreon plan, so if you want a little bit more of us, we have ways that you can get that. So make sure to be on the lookout for that. Probably late this week or early next week. I want to make sure everything is right. We got the emotes coming for y'all in the Twitch chat, and all of you in the podcast feed, I thank you for the 8 years of support. It has meant the world to us. So with that said, we got to get into that little mini series between the Heat and the Pistons, Duncan. And so the Heat have this embarrassing, I called it one of their most embarrassing losses in the last 5 years. Because, you know, the Pistons aren't exactly, you know, a juggernaut. And I think Miami kind of getting their cavalry back. I know Jimmy Butler and Avery Bradley weren't there, but you got to figure that at the very least, they put up a fight and they get blown out at home. And at home in quotation marks to Jeremy Grant's fantastic and everything. But, you know, It was not pretty, and I kind of like getting outside perspectives on, like, what's going on with Heat, because they've been a little bit hard to nail. So, like, through those first two games, like, what to you has stood out the most?
Well, you know, it's funny. The win was the game that I didn't end up watching. I forget what – I had some other things going on, and it was like I can – like, really kind of inconvenience myself and watch this Pistons game, which is probably going to end one way. And so I ended up, like, not watching that one. I watched last night's game. A lot of what I know about that game now comes to me from hearsay and others' observations and things like that. But, the Pistons aren't a good team, but they're not like a typical bad team either. You know, they've got Jeremy Grant, who could be an all-star candidate, I think, on a better team. He would be an all-star easily. You know, I don't exactly know how the 12 players would break down and, like, where he would slot in necessarily. So I'm not that detailed into it at this point, but, you know, I think, like, the caliber of play that he's had is all-star quality. So you've got an all-star, we'll just call him an all-star flat. You've got a team full of players that play really hard from start to finish. So, you know, the Pistons are a team that should lose plenty of games, but anytime a better team doesn't give them, you know, the respect that you should give another NBA team, they will probably at least make your life miserable. You know, the Suns got up on them 23 points and then kind of shut her down, and the Pistons came back and won that game. I know the Heat are not exactly, like, at full strength and everything like that. So, especially as long as the Pistons are able to, like, stay healthy and keep guys out of COVID and things like that, there may be situations where they aren't even the worst team on paper. You know, like, if they come up against a team that's been really just decimated, there's going to be times where they have the best player on the floor in Jeremy Grant. And I think that coming into the season, that's not really something we expected from them. So, you know, they're going to lose plenty of games, but they're also going to be a tough out most of the time.
I mean, the Grant stuff has been fascinating to watch because, like, he was a guy that I looked at for the Heat. And I was like, you know what? Going into the offseason, if, you know, thinking in Miami's perspective, I'm like, well, the thing they need most is going to be kind of a wing 3-and-D scorer. I think that their upside is something better than Jay Crowder at that 4 spot, right? Like, we saw what they kind of topped out at, but the best version of themselves, they can get a guy like that that can play up a position on defense, can shoot the ball reasonably well, and can kind of attack a closeout, get you, you know, 12 to 15 points from that wing spot because they have, you know, their fair share of guards and bigs. And Grant was the guy I wanted the most, but I was like, there's just no way. I thought like it was a shoe-in. Frankie, we talked about this a lot. Like, there was just no way he was going to leave. You know, Denver, I think you can equate them as, you know, just as good a team as Miami. You know, they just happen to fall in the West, and the Heat and them both lost to the same team, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And the money would have been, the Heat wouldn't be able to offer that money. But he's been, I mean, on defense, he's been a terror and everything. I thought it was curious how he kept hunting the BAM switch at the end of the game. Duncan, like, what's going on there? Because, like, I get it, like, you know, if it kind of just happens, but it was like almost like he wanted that matchup. Like, Bam is a very willing switcher, and it's not like they were kind of going around the switch. Okay, we have a mismatch somewhere else. Jeremy's like, nah, I'm doing this off the dribble.
Well, I think that Jeremy is very well aware of like what this season is for him. You know, this is his season to figure some things out about like what he is capable of, and like the kind of player he is. I think that was a big reason that he left Denver. You know, like, he knew that playing with Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, he was going to be the third guy, probably at best, no matter how good he got. You know, like, that pecking order is set like in stone. So, you know, he took equal money to go to a team that's going to probably lose the most games in the NBA or close to it. But in doing so, you know, he can be part of like a rebuild and maybe be the guy for that rebuild. And one of the ways you can be the guy is to figure out like just where his capacity is, like where his capabilities lie, like where, you know, what his maximum level is, kind of. So that might be sort of intentional. You know, he might be purposefully going at the best just to see if he can do it. You know, I don't know if it is necessarily that well defined, if like that's exactly like the goal for him. But it seems kind of in line with like everything that we've seen from him this season, you know, just from the starting point of choosing the Pistons for the sake of like that expanded role that he wanted. And I think that most of us almost mock right off the bat is like, you know, you are this guy, like you are in this box, the Jeremy Grant in Denver and OKC box. And we don't really see any reason for you to like expand beyond that, you know, go win a championship with Denver. But it seems as though he's got really to an interesting degree, like different plans and different goals. And I think that maybe, you know, trying to pick on Bam, while it sounds ludicrous, and it is ludicrous, like if you're trying to see if like maybe you can be, you know, like a top 10 player in the NBA, like what better way than to see if you can like go get the best.
It's like a litmus test, and like, yeah. I, you know, he's awesome. I love watching him play. It's been really cool. And the, you know, kind of focusing on that game, you know, he went down really early. They looked bad. The defense was, I mean, I tweeted out, I was like, this is a shameful perimeter defense. It's not even like Frankie, you know, we know that they've had issues at the point of attack, and like, that's fine. Like, we know that Goran and Kendrick can't stay in front of anybody. We know that Gabe is like, this is not like new to us. Like, this is, we're not discovering something through this little series that we did not know. But when these guys are getting caught behind these screens, and Mason Plumlee is just tearing you to shreds on his little slips, his little rolls, little elbow stuff. And, you know, they just had no bite on defense until they dusted off the corpse of Mo Harkless. Who, Duncan, by the way, do you know what Mo Harkless was shooting from the field before yesterday?
Oh, I don't know offhand. I'm guessing not great, though, from the lead up here.
16%.
Oh, he was
in like significant minutes. Yeah, it was bad. Like, he hadn't made a 2-point field goal like the whole season.
Oh, so he's putting up a Sadiq Bey is what he was doing.
Oh yeah, it was bad. And his net rating was, I think, minus 34.9, which is just oof. So
that, I mean, the ball from
let me tell you something. It was rough. I declared the Mo Harkless experience done, right? And I was like, well, they gotta pivot to KZ, which, Frankie, they did. We got Casey got pulled. But kind of going back to their defense, like they had no bite. They kind of put Mo in at the three, which I think is like the important part here, because Mo Harkless, via cleaning the glass before this, had played 93% of his possessions at power forward, which is just 30% above his career mark any other time. And he's not a big guy. He is getting pushed off his spots. He has a really small back line in terms of these guard help defenders. I've made the joke a million times. Giannis turns the corner on the pick and roll, and he sees, you know, Mo Harkless and Tyler Hero, and he just starts laughing because, you know, what are you going to do about it? And they played him in position. They were very committed to playing KO plus Bam plus or KO plus Precious, and then Andre kind of filled those spot 4 minutes. And Frankie, that worked. They got a little bit of bite. They got a little bit of switchability, and they looked like a competent defense for the first time, dare I say, since the Pelicans game.
He looked comfortable most of all, more so than you've ever seen him in a Heat jersey. He not having to drop, getting to harass ball handlers, getting to press up on DHOs, and he led the team in deflections with 8, I believe it was. And he just looked like he was able to play his game more, and that's something moving forward that he'd have to continue to look into. Definitely, as they get healthier, we'll see how they sort out their four lineups, because they really don't have a small ball four. They, you know, outside of the KO, Bam, KO, Precious, I don't know who their best option is right now. Because even when Jimmy gets back, you would think it's Jimmy, but you know, how much do you want to play Jimmy at the four going forward? But We'll see how it goes. I really like their tenacity in the second half. Goran made a statement that when he went to the huddle in the first quarter, I believe it was, that they just were listless. They were unaggressive. They were playing soft, and they didn't look like they wanted it. And it's true. It looked like they were just going through the motions on both ends. And that's something that it's good that Goran called them out on. We need Bam to be able to call them out on and lead by example as well.
We're going to get into that a little later. So I like to monitor this stuff because I think that this is an important trend in terms of their kind of on-court identity, what the Bam Olynyk pairing is on court. So as of now, they're at 150 minutes and they're a plus almost 5 net rating, and their offense is at 113, which I think is important because their offense has been totally stinky despite them getting the shots that they want. That is one wonderful cat, Duncan. What's cat's name?
Yes, that's Coco. That's Coco.
Excellent cat name. That's just for stream. Yeah, stream.
Yeah, he has Coco. Found. Yeah, he's found a way to get on just about every live stream I have ever done. it's a remarkable streak of efficiency. He just never misses.
Listen, not unlike Bam at the rim. We're gonna get into those numbers later because they're pretty impressive. But yeah. Frankie, like that lineup has been good. That lineup, despite all the bad losses and the weird stuff, that lineup has maintained above water, which is essentially kind of tied to their starting lineup too. That so I think they found something to at least survive in the regular season until they find a solution. Bam without Olynyk, by the way, is minus almost 10 per 100 possessions in almost 170 minutes, which is surprising. And Olynyk is about the same with Bam without Bam, but I mean that's a lot of that's playing against Joel Embiid minutes without Jimmy Bam. So I don't know. And that Milwaukee loss. But that's surprising. I mean, obviously, you kind of hope that Bam kind of floats above water there. You know what I mean? Like, and essentially, any lineup where Bam is not with Olynyk is Bam at the five, because Bam and Precious have not played a minute together. So when Bam is the only center on the floor, they're getting boat raced, which is just completely the opposite of last season where they were dominating teams.
I think that's also a big point of the personnel, though, because all those non-Kelly at the four lineups, it's Mo or it's Iguodala, that they're not respecting that they're shooting, and they're not a hindrance on defense for the other team, that they're not doing anything enough pressuring, they're not deterring them from the rim. If they get a shot at the rim when it's not Bam, and like you said before, Bam is a very willing switcher, they're getting offensive rebounds. They're getting second chance looks. They're getting points in the paint because you're going against Mo Harkless or Andre Iguodala, and Andre Iguodala can only strip so many ball handlers going to the rim. So you know it's a big difference of from Jay last year, because you know Jay's not a huge guy, but at least he's stocky, and he'll put a body on him and he'll contest and battle in there for inside for boards. And then you're also missing Jimmy and Tyler, who are good rebounders for their positions as well.
Nikias made the point on the Dunker Spot podcast, which check that out. Our homie Nikias Duncan and check Steve Jones Dunker Spot podcast, rising in the ranks of sports podcasts, leaving us in the dust. Nikias forgetting where he came from, completely obliterating us in the competition, and we could not be happier. Check that out. Rate, review, give him all the praise in the world. Best damn guy I know. He mentioned on the pod with Steve, kind of talked about the rebounding, Frankie, where, you know, Bam is such a willing switcher, especially onto point guards, where sometimes he doesn't even need to. And by proxy, he's not helping on the rebound, because when he's doing that switch, now Goran, Tyler, Duncan, Nunn, someone's on a big and they shouldn't be, and they're just getting pounded on the glass. Now, their defensive rebound rate is middle of the pack. Their offensive rebound rate is at the bottom, which, you know, they're defensive rebounding fine, but they're also not offensive rebounding either. So, like, their rebounding issues are a little weird. I think they've been slightly overstated. I think you want to get a little more offensive rebounds. You kind of want to give your offense a little help, especially when you're turning the ball over like you're the damn backup point guard on a bad team or whatever. Like, it's been really bad for 100 possessions of the worst turnover team in the league. So that's kind of weird. Duncan, I kind of want your thoughts on Heat zone defense yesterday, because they haven't really done that a lot this year. And last year, they like to play with the bigs up at the top of the zone and the guards at the bottom of the back of the zone. They kind of flipped that. They kind of had the guards up yesterday and kind of this season, which I thought was interesting, because the stress that the long arms kind of puts on the passes really was effective. They were killed and dropped. Derrick Rose and just everybody on the Pistons was destroying them. And I the zone worked, Duncan, but I wasn't a fan of it. I didn't think it was. I kind of thought they got a little lucky with the shots they gave up.
Yeah, I think, you know, with how prevalent the zone is becoming, it seems like something that is, it worked really well kind of across the league, but it would get thrown out because, you know, nobody was accustomed to it. So it seems as though, like, as it becomes more of a frequently used defense, offenses are just going to become more accustomed to it, and they're going to adjust. And the Pistons in particular, I remember a couple seasons ago, the Heat threw a zone at them, and the Pistons practically like put the ball down in center court and just like walked off the court. Like, they quit the moment that zone was shown. They're like, all right, can we swear on this podcast? Screw this. We're done.
All right. We are Chris Brown.
Yeah, the Pistons are like, fuck this. We're not playing against the zone. We're going home. And so they have a poor track record, historically speaking, against the Heat zone in particular. But I mean, like, that's also a couple years ago when you know, nobody was really rolling that out there for more than a couple possessions or every other game, maybe, or something like that. And so, yeah, I did notice, actually, like, the zone configuration was not exactly, you know, what you would call a standard zone. And I wondered if that might throw them off. I haven't looked at, like, their versus zone numbers for the Pistons lately, but they definitely don't shrivel up and die when they see it like they once did not that long ago. but, you know, at the same time, like, go ahead.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, like, at the same time, like, I do really enjoy these sort of, like, niche things that you see in the NBA, like, spread the wildfire. So, you know, I'll hail the return of the zone, and I hope that more bizarre configurations and ways of implementing it become more prevalent rather than, like, it going to the wayside. You know, I just think that, like, when coaches are so willing to exhaust the playbook that, like, they go back to, like, middle school stuff, to me, that is just, like, it's maybe it seems simplistic, but it's so cool that coaches are just, like, willing to try anything to slow down opponents. So from like a sophisticated X's and O's point of view, I you know, I can't throw a whole lot of insight into, like, what I see from the Heat and their zone, because I haven't gotten to watch a whole lot of them. Yeah. But at the same time, like, I just really love, like, the fact that sharp coaches like Stevens and Spoelstra and guys like that, and Nick Nurse, you know, famously will just yep. throw the kitchen sink, including playground defense. You know, like, to me, that's just so wild.
I'm actually like really glad you brought that up, because we haven't talked a lot about like Spoelstra like as a figure on the show in a while, but like kind of the funky stuff of using your guard screening and horns is like really popular now. Like now the Warriors were running that, and like a lot of teams do that. I really think that teams are kind of catching on the Miami handoff stuff, especially when you don't have like a lot of, you know, north south ball handling pick and roll talent. You know, I really like what Miami's done with kind of the handoff stuff, which I think it's a little Spursian, but kind of to the nth degree. And I kind of like how I'm noticing. I know that San Antonio is like really big on that, and Atlanta has recently started to up their handoff offense, which I don't know. I think it's fun. Like, and kind of your point, Rick Carlisle doing the funky zone with the Mavs in 2011, and it's we're here.
Yeah, the handoff awesome. Is another thing. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. The handoff thing, especially. Thinking back a couple of years ago when Reggie Jackson was had basically one bad leg that he was working on, one of the things that Stan Van Gundy at the time was relying on, instead of like, you know, using your typical pick and roll, was handoffs with Andre Drummond, you know, on the elbow, and using him as a playmaker. And basically from like the season before that, I think it was 15-16 going into 16-17, Drummond didn't really have a whole lot of experience. So you got to see, you know, the glory and the failures, and boy, oh boy, does Andre Drummond have a lot of both of those, especially with the ball in his hands. I think that especially when you don't have sort of like that classical, pick and roll attack, those dribble handoffs really kind of like open a whole new world for better or worse. But like, if you've got good playmaking bigs, like, you know, they can be a real weapon.
Like, I know Pistons with Plumlee, that's really good, and Bam and Olynyk are good at that. I mean, like, and remember, Eric Spoelstra went from Dwayne Wade, who is arguably a top five pick and roll player of all time. I mean, Dwayne, even at his advanced age, and I was thinking about this today, because I remember all the Donovan Mitchell comps to Dwayne, and I know Donovan's kind of struggled to start the season, but like, Donovan moves a bit like Twilight years Dwayne. Like, Dwayne, when he turns the corner on a pick and roll, like, he got a plan, right? It's kind of a slithering, I'm gonna get to the side that I like, I'm gonna get to that little jumper on the left side, like, I'm gonna get to where I want, and I'm kind of like preempting this. Before, Dwayne was fast. I mean, he was flash, right? He kind of split the pick and roll, kind of go north south, and before you know it, you know, Omeka Okafor is getting dunked on, right? The help's too late, and Dwayne's yamming on you, right? And it's like, Eric went from that, and LeBron and all that stuff, to kind of this Dion Waiters-centric offense, where it's like, well, you know, Hassan's a bad pick and roll player. He's a bad screener. He's just not connecting. He's just not there. And they kind of pivoted. They're like, okay, let's, you know, once they got Olynyk in there and Bam, they're like, let's start running some handoffs. Let's get Wayne Ellington off. You know, we'll set pistol screens, and we'll kind of, you know, initiate like that, and we'll kind of flip the handoff doing that. And they've gotten so much mileage out of that with, really, in reality, like, not a lot of like high end talent. And it's been crazy to watch them kind of put together patchwork offenses, sometimes in the middle of the season when they pivot to this stuff. It's amazing. I don't know. I love Spo. I'll always talk about Dark Lord Spo and all his like weird things. I'll Duncan, are you familiar with my Andre Drummond take?
I don't know if I am. I'd love to hear it.
So I don't like him as a player. I think he's like not a good, I don't think he's like that good a basketball player. Like, obviously he's a good basketball player, but like, I think kind of what people think of Andre Drummond and what I think of Andre Drummond is pretty substantially different. And there was a point, and Frankie, we were out. I don't know if I've told the story on the podcast recently.
Yeah.
Frankie, you were in town. We were out with Nikias, myself, you, Alf, Christian, all these EP people.
Pre-pandemic.
Pre-pandemic. This is a while ago. We were watching a Celtics Sixers game, I think. And I came up with the take at the bar that I mean this, Duncan. I was like, Hassan Whiteside better than Andre Drummond.
Oh, I think I heard this. I understand people not being high on Drummond. I can't criticize it, but I think that's a link too far.
Got Marcus. You know the Marcus Camby trains. The Marcus Camby replies. The longest one ever. I think I got over 500, Frankie. It was something like that, right?
He tweeted this out.
I think that was my fault. I think I did that to you.
Yeah, you did.
I believe I did that to you. Yeah.
Well, because that brings me to my next point. You're a professional shitster on Twitter. The other day, yes. What did you tweet? We got to get Jokic some help. Basketball. What was the tweet? You tweeted that we got to get Jokic out of here. We need to get Jokic some help.
Yeah, we got to get Jokic out of Denver.
Lottery bound Denver Nuggets. I mean, listen.
Yeah. Yeah, they had lost he put up like a 40-point triple-double or something, and they lost in overtime, and nobody else did shit all game long for him. And I just, you know, as the greatest thoughts usually are, I just like off the cuff, I tweeted it out and then put the old app down and then came back a few minutes later and saw that Matt Moore had retweeted it. And that was that.
Your mentions were on fire. It was
so funny. The best though were like the really truly genuinely like hurt and upset like Nuggets fans who were like, what did we ever do to you? Like, why? Yeah, well, no, there's more. It's like, why are you being so mean? And I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. I'm not trying to like hurt you at 2 a.m. Like, this wasn't sort of like well thought out troll plan. Like, I tweeted it and Matt Moore was like, yeah, I'm pissed at these guys too. And that was basically what that came
He's
down
like,
to.
I agree. Get Joker. Save Joker. Hashtag free Joker.
Gary Harris will do that to you. Watching him play over this last year has done that for me. I'm like, God damn, man.
I've heard so, like, I think Gary is like the guy over there that everyone just kind of hopes will turn a corner, which will change their total trajectory. I don't know how many national podcasts I've heard of. Oh, if they could get something out of Gary Harris, I've heard that name way too much.
Yeah, I feel like everybody is kind of like even off that boat by now. It's just like, you know, whatever he can provide, great. You're kind of stuck with him for now.
Chat's asking what a Bam and Jokic front court would look like. I don't want that. Duncan, Heat Twitter is like obsessed with pairing Bam with another center. Why would you not? Why would you not want to optimize and go with a wing instead of a center? Yeah, obviously they'd be good, but that'd be weird.
Seems like overkill.
It does. It's like, what do you need
Twitter,
that for?
Heat Twitter is just obsessed with transactions. Period.
Like, no, literally, we started this. Really. Like, we started this show, and somebody in chat is like, "Is there a chance that we make a trade for Depot or Zach LaVine or Larry Market?" And I was like, chill, they just won a game. It's 12 games into the season. Like,
it was against the Pistons, though. Does that count?
It was, listen, like, they beat the Wizards, Duncan, and it was so uninspired. It was like, it felt like a loss. It felt like a loss. They beat the Pistons and they beat the Wizards, and it's like, man, does that even count? Because that was a closer game than it should have been. Beal and Westbrook didn't play. It was just the Wizards were leading by double digits at some point. It was like, oh, man.
Garrison Matthews, somebody called Garrison Matthews dropped like 20 points or 16 points, something like that.
Whoever that is.
He can shoot a little bit. I don't think he can do anything else, but he can shoot a little bit.
Oh, he scored like 8 points in like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It was Reggie. It was like Reggie-esque. It was like T-Mac. Bad. I don't want to go too late tonight, but I do want to get into some Bam stuff because I was kind of doing some digging. Because listen, I think that their ceiling, whatever improvement that they're not going to have the roster that they're going to have last year. The last year's roster just made a lot of sense. I don't know if they're going to have the trade juice to make something significant. You know, Riley's going to try on this. He's going to be on the phone probably now. Who knows? But they're going to try something. But as presently constituted, if they're going to improve, that needs to come internally. And Duncan appears to be on pace to do what he did last season. And it's unreasonable to ask maybe the best shooter in the league to be better. I mean, he's outstanding. I mean, like, the dude is just amazing, and he's up to scoring. So, like, I don't know what more you can ask of Duncan. You look at Bam and Tyler, and we've talked a lot about Tyler, the pick and roll ball handler, has much improved, 95th percentiles, blah, 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 blah. The Bam stuff, I think, yesterday took a turn in a way that it felt a little more real than, oh, he's hit a couple jumpers. Like, I was looking into the... he's shooting like 56% on that pull-up jumper, which is huge because when they run their little handoff sets and Duncan's coming off that handoff, and if that is not available to them, whether it's Wes Matthews playing really well or Chris Middleton or Marcus Smart, whoever the hell is defending that are really good screen avoiders and they really take away that handoff, as we saw in the playoffs sometimes, Miami needs to pivot into something else. And what oftentimes happened is that handoff was not there. And then what would happen is they would pivot to another handoff. And they would do, as I've said a lot of times on the show, the revolving door of handoffs. which is just not great offense. What Bam has now added is that when that option's not there, when he can't get that initial trigger, well, now he has that one dribble pull-up because he's a threat to go to the basket. His free throw rate has increased every year. He's shooting like 86% from the line or something, which is a huge improvement over the mid-70s last season. And in the playoffs, he was at around that figure as well. The mid-range jumper is at 56%. That pull-up jumper is at 54%. So he's getting to his spots with one or two dribbles. He's taking that, and that's opening up a whole Pandora's box of offense. Now, I know that their offense is ranked like 22nd in the league right now, Duncan, but like you saw it, the array of jumpers, the fadeaways, the catch and shoots, like he was in his bag, and that wasn't just a yesterday thing. That's been a thing that's happened a lot this season, but yesterday it felt, oh, we're winning a game because of this.
Yeah, it's funny. It's good actually that you know, that we're talking about this right now. At Hoops Habit, our Simon Smith wrote about Bam this morning, and yeah, kind of highlighted some of what I hadn't even realized. Like, I've been high on Bam for, you know, as long if not longer than many. Like when I was running the fan site at Heat site, All You Can Heat, I was convinced that Bam was going to be, like, you know, if not a superstar, like high level star, fringe superstar kind of thing. And he's already putting together this offensive package, if you will, that like I certainly didn't see, especially this early in his career. I forget who tweeted this out. It might have been Nikias. I think it's something like he's the only player with a usage over like 24% that has a true shooting percentage of 70, I believe. Cooper. Yeah. Like, I knew that he was putting up like really strong offensive numbers, but I didn't realize that he was putting up like league leading true shooting numbers on
like that's insane.
Yeah. Like top two or top three starter usage, you know, like that is unbelievable. It's so efficient, you know.
And that's partly because Jimmy's been out and Tyler, you know, is still young. But I mean, it's still, I think that usage will probably kind of level off when they're healthy. But I mean, it's just, it's incredible.
Right. Yeah. Being able to like ride on his shoulders basically while those guys are out is so huge. You know, like you need a guy who can keep you afloat while you're either struggling or whether you're injured or a season like this where you're probably going to miss games with COVID and things like that. Like being able to have your best defender also be such a reliable source of offense is just like so huge. You know, like how many teams can really say that like that's the case for them? You know, like there's really only a few teams that can like so reliably count on like their best defender also being their most productive offensive scorer.
And Duncan, like, the Heat have two of those guys because Jimmy's the same way. And that's why, as bad as they've kind of started and as funky as they've looked, they've had kind of irregularity in health and playing time. I think when it comes down to it, your two best players are elite on both ends of the floor. And that's going to matter a lot, especially in this league where you need to switch and both those guys can switch. You need to be able to like abuse mismatches, which both those, I mean, Jimmy is in the playoffs was hunting central. It was great. I love Jimmy the Hunt. And you know, if Bam starts to realize, oh God, I'm a great player, he needs to do it. Cause I don't know if you noticed, Duncan, and it's been a problem for us. Frankie, I know you're nodding your head. Bam's like passing under the rim at a layup. It's the Jimmy Butler syndrome. He's getting under to the rim and he's like passing out of a layup and it's infuriating. And he's shooting 84% within 5 feet this season. He's improved every single year. He started at 60%, then 68, then 68, and now 84. He's the best pick and roll big in the league, minimum 20 possessions. And he's at 1.78 per possessions on that action. Just like crazy. He's destroying everybody. And he's passing out of layups, Duncan.
It could be better.
He could be better. He's turning the ball over astronomically. And he's like, why is he passing out of layups? We were so frustrated about this. Like, is there, how many guys that good are like under the rim and are like, nope.
Well, hopefully he knocks that off. You know, let's ratchet up those scoring totals a little bit and knock down those turnovers and assists maybe.
No, and like, one of the biggest jumps he's had is as an isolation scorer. He was not confident at all, not aggressive enough in years past. This year, he's at 1.38 points per possession, the 95th percentile. Like, this guy just gets better every year. Yeah.
I did not know that. Yeah, I didn't even think to check the ISO numbers.
Yeah, because courtesy of I Can Be Your Hero.
It's almost as if Bam's good. It's almost as if he should like do this more.
He might overall in the half court, he's in the 88th percentile, 1.14. So that's including everything. And you're seeing how deadly he is as a dribble handoff. Yeah, how deadly he is as a playmaker with the DHOs and operating outside out of the elbow, 18 feet in. He's a dynamic pick and roll player. Just his athleticism, his frame. He had a little bit of a struggle catching the ball this season. I don't know what that was about, but he's usually very reliable there, and he's just the ideal modern big man.
Yeah, he really is. He checks all the boxes.
Like I've said this a bunch. They're at their best when it's Jimmy, Bam, and shooters, because the versatility that you're at when you can switch 1 through 5 and you're pretty comfortable with most people doing it outside of your guard switching out to fives. Like if you have a really flexible switchy lineup, and Eric Spoelstra has been very known to like Nick Nurse, like Brad Stevens, like they're going to try everything. And when you have that kind of flexibility, that kind of floor spacing, and those two guys that just get it, it's not crazy to think that they can replicate what they did last season. Now the Nets present a new issue, but like, I know that they wouldn't walk into any season as favorites, and I'm sure that they're going to make a trade to kind of fill their void at power forward. But it's like, it's why the start has been so weird, because their defense has been largely forcing the shots that you want, right? I mean, like, at least looking at the numbers, the film tells a different story, but their shot profile on defense is what they did last year. They are second in fewest attempts at the rim, which is on par with last year. They just didn't allow attempts at the rim, and they're helping off corners and they're allowing those threes, which is what they did. It's what the Bucks do. It's what the Raptors do. It's what teams do now. And the Heat are really good at it. And this season, it's just kind of gone awry for them. I mean, it's strange. Their defense feels a little worse, but it might just be weird sample. And like Jimmy's not playing, and their offense, they're getting the shots they want. I mean, other than Tyler, their shooters are hitting. Like Duncan's playing great. Bam's obviously, having a great offensive season. And when Jimmy's outside of a couple of games, I mean, Jimmy's been Jimmy. So like Frankie, they have like these issues, right? It's like, but if you look at kind of the indicators, you would think that they're fine, but like we were treading water yesterday.
Yeah, man. I think it also has to do with a lot of the personnel that they're playing with because of COVID and injuries. You're missing Jimmy and Avery. They're two best perimeter guys that can really muck up games. The turnover issues definitely been a huge issue. One of the worst, I think the worst in allowing turnovers per game. And that's giving them fast break points. They also don't have really athleticism to make up that difference in stopping fast breaks. Or getting their own fast break. I haven't checked their offensive fast break, but I'm pretty sure they're one of the worst.
Well, Goran's good. Everyone else is a suspect.
But even Goran's lost a step, and he's like, he's not, the old Goran was beating guys down the floor himself. Now he's got to wait for a pass or getting caught up, and he's even missing layups and stuff. You want to see that picked up. But defensively, I want to see them contain the ball a lot more. Bam in drop has to be late shot clock more often than not to prevent all these mismatches in the offensive rebounding and the fouls inside the extra points of the paint. He can't be switching with 13 on the clock. He's got to be more decisive, more selective there.
By the way, Frankie, Yep. Goran's in the 92nd percentile in fast break.
My eye test was not telling me that.
Killed, dude. I was like, what are you doing?
Okay, how many possessions?
He's up there. I mean, he's at 20, 2 per game.
20. Yeah.
20. Okay. Yeah. Well, he's probably the only one up there with possessions. And still, that's not old Goran. And when you have 20 that's 20 possessions on the season, and he'd get like the fewest amount of shots out of every team in the league. You know, that makes, you can't make up those differences.
Part of that's turnovers. Part of that's their pace. And Eric, teams have always been slow, even contrary belief with LeBron teams. So that I'm not worried about. I think people have kind of made too big an issue on that. And I was like, that doesn't bother me that much. Like, I think their offense is going to eventually be fine where that's just not a thing. And like the turnovers, I think a lot of that's turnover base. I mean, they're like turning the ball over like 19 times per 100 possessions. It's crazy. That's a lot of just giving team like a lot, the ball a lot. I'm not that concerned about that.
Yeah, they have that's part. A lot of that is you're asking Gabe Vincent and Kendrick Nunn to handle so much because Jimmy isn't here and Tyler's the out. So I think a lot of that will be fixed as the season goes on. And Bam has had his struggles as well. Let's make sure we recognize that Bam is one of the best bigs in the league right now. You know, everybody, I see my timeline goes crazy, man. Bam has to be the best defender. He's got to get all the rebounds. He's got to initiate plays. He's got to score. It's like, guys, man, Bam cannot do all this. Shaq wasn't doing all that. Now, like, you're not going to get that out of Bam. That's being unreasonable. As long as you, like, I definitely think Bam needs to be more aggressive, especially, like, there's possessions where he's got the ball top of the key, one-on-one with Mason Plumlee. Mason Plumlee's dropping, and there's 9 seconds on the clock, and he's dribbling back out looking for a DHO. Like, go take that jumper, attack the basket, make a play. Those are the type of plays that frustrate me. But as far as the whole team, like, I take everything as with a grain of salt until they're healthy.
Okay, so last couple things before we get out of here, because we're running on time. And at the end of the show, we're going to tickle your fancy for trades, Chad. I know you keep asking. Duncan, I guess you watch the Pistons broadcast, correct?
It depends right now.
Last night. Last night specifically.
Yeah, last night I was on the Pistons broadcast. You see, as a Fox Sports guy and a Hulu subscriber, currently, I have to rely... Yeah, well, allegedly, unless it's a Fox Sports network station. So, yeah, I usually try to watch the Detroit when possible.
The reason I'm asking is because Eric Reed, the play-by-play broadcaster for the Heat, beloved figure in South Florida, one of the nicest men I've ever met in my life. I mean, the guy went on my college when I was at FIU, came on as a guest when I'm pretty sure he wasn't allowed to because he has to ask permission for the Heat. But he came on as a very nice man when I was very young and scared. And he's just a great guy, just a tremendous person. And just every time I spoke to him, he's just great. And for some reason, last night, he was picking on Blake Griffin. Now, I'm going to play a clip. So somebody, GIF D Sports, Heat Twitter legend.
2-minute master cut.
Yeah, I'm going to play a little bit of the 2-minute master cut for you guys. Because, I want to know what happened here.
Blake Griffin, the 11-year veteran out of Oklahoma, averaging a career low, just under 14 points a game. Even though Blake Griffin scored only 3 points and took just 2 shots on the first half.
Not necessary. It's a different
Blake Griffin these days. Well, another strand. And Wayne Ellington each have 15 for the Pistons. Is Blake Griffin almost an afterthought right now? He's 1 of 3, all from three, just 3 points in his 21 minutes. Griffin guarded by Duncan Robinson.
This is my favorite.
Johnny, in the old days, he would look to take a player like Robinson into the paint. He's just camped out on that 3-point line.
Very pedestrian. Doesn't want to be the threat, Jeremy.
I mean,
savage.
What? And there's like 2 minutes of that, and I'm like, what? For Blake? Like, Blake's out here minding his business. Like, did you see that Steph Curry quote today, Duncan?
The one where AC Law caught a stray. Oh, yeah. AC Law, he's smart, just caught blast across the bow.
If you have Marcus Thompson, Steph talking about Wiseman's struggles and said, the youngster will be fine. I used to get bent for Ice Law. Like, come on. Like, why? what did my man do? Like, he's minding his own business today and he gets a damn stray by Steph.
And I think he was trending for a while last night. Somebody was like, poor AC Law was just trying to eat some lasagna, and he saw his name on Twitter.
Dude, could you imagine?
He's like, putting his kids to bed, and he saw his name on Twitter.
He's putting AC Law the fifth to bed.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like, I was like, wow, like poor Blake Griffin, poor AC Law. I mean, he Twitter had a field day with that. I mean, as this happened, so I'm watching the game with my mother, who, by the way, is an Eric Reed stan, Eric Reed apologist, loves Eric to death. She loves Eric more than she loves me. And
she could probably win a race with Blake, too.
She turns to me and she's like, what did Blake do to Eric? I go, Mom, I don't know. And like, Twitter thinks this is funny. So we're watching it. And like, at the very end, he couldn't help himself. He let like one last one rip. I was like, damn. I don't know. It's I love little broadcasting moments like that, and everyone's like, that was funny.
It is so funny. What's actually worse is in the like the pregame Pistons Twitter, like the official Pistons account, like at Detroit Pistons, they tweeted like the head to head matchup, and like the two players that they selected with their statistical averages were Bam for the Heat and Blake for the Pistons. And I saw that and I was like, they really had to match Blake up on the graphic with Bam.
That's not fair. That's the opposite of what the Pacers did with Thad Young, where they put him up with Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and LeBron.
Yeah, everybody who's averaged like 7x2 or whatever.
7.2 assists in 30.5 minutes. Well, honestly, thank you to whatever graphics person, whatever media person at Fox Sports Indiana did, because like we've gotten a lot of mileage off of that.
It's incredible.
Did you see the story that came out today? Sports Illustrated kind of put out about how the NBA is thinking about kind of, there are certain players that are kind of talking about taking the vaccine in public for some like educational and like wellness purposes. Did any of you catch that?
Saw the headline. I haven't read it yet. Think there's some merit to it, but at the same time, it feels a little disingenuous to hide it behind sort of like the cloak of public awareness. You know, like just say you're taking it because you only need like what, maybe a couple thousand doses to get the whole league covered. Like the players plus the traveling parties and everything like that. A couple thousand doses when you've got like hundreds of thousands spoiling in warehouses right now. Anyway. You are essentially like, it's going to help prop up a multi-billion-dollar industry. You're going to reduce the possibility of like traveling super spreaders because like these guys are traveling all over the country all the time. So, I mean, I think it rings a little bit fake to say that like, you know, this is a PSA that like the vaccine is safe. Like just shoot them up and send them to work. You know, like to me, it sounds a little coarse, you know, to put it that way, but they're being treated like essential workers anyway. They're traveling probably more than anybody on the planet right now. You got to figure out some way to get your first line, like your first responders, maybe something like that, vaccinated no later than players, you know, because that sends a pretty bad message, I think. But I do think that like having them further ahead in the line than like very fit young men normally would be, I think it makes a lot of sense, just considering the fact that like they are propping up like a multi-billion dollar industry, and it's not as though they serve no public good either. I think that like you kind of need to have some entertainment in this day and age right now.
I thought the interesting part about the article was how like the league is kind of framing it as, you know, education for Black people in America, how Black people are just generally distressing by the statistics of vaccines. And I guess it sat a little wrong with me to like make these players kind of like test subjects. You know what I mean? I think the league tried to market it as a certain way, like, hey, look, we're doing this public good because, you know, these people don't believe in vaccines or whatever, which is just like, it felt really gross to me. And like, I think the NBA typically gets this kind of stuff right. And it's like, I read the article and I was like, what are they doing? Like, who's been advising them? I was like, I know that Kareem got it and did the whole video and everything, but it just, I don't know. It felt like they were like, look, we're helping Black people. And I'm like, that doesn't, That's not how I'm reading this. This doesn't feel this way. And it's kind of what you said about it being disingenuous, but just the entire framing of it made me uncomfortable in a way that, I don't know, it didn't sit that well with me.
Yeah, like the end goal is to like get the players vaccinated. You know, I think that much is pretty clear. And I don't think that that's a bad goal either, you know, because like your choices are get all the players vaccinated or continue to have, you know, 3 games a night wiped out by COVID and be like a national punching bag, you know, because it certainly doesn't look good having like the Washington Wizards out for 2 weeks with COVID, for example.
Leaving a trail of positive tests in their wake.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, so if your alternatives are like continue to just like live under the like the crushing fist of COVID right now, or just like get them vaccinated, like grab 2,500 vaccinations and just go do this thing, you know, like that to me, that's kind of where it is.
So the great Tiffany Meeks in chat, you can hear her on the Hangover Time postgame show here at Miami Heat Beat. She says the average black person won't take a vaccine because a bunch of millionaire athletes take it. This is also a good point. It's just, and yeah. I know that Haberstroh said this on House of Strauss recently, that he's like, well, a lot of players also don't want to take this. They kind of want to wait and see. They don't want to be the first on the roller coaster. You know, they have their concerns too, which is, you know, it's not fair. Tiffany follows up by saying they need to make the best decisions based on their players and let the average Americans make their own decisions. I don't disagree with that. Yep. And I guess the other aspect of it, it's not just players, it's coaches, it's trainers, it's, you know, these players have ecosystems around them. And we've talked a lot on the show about how the fire that the league is playing with COVID this season, because, you know, guys need their training, guys need their massages, guys need their chefs, guys need their workouts, right? So, you know, Duncan, I don't know if maybe you could shed more light on this, but like, so Bam's in protocol, right? Is he not working out that whole week? I imagine not, right? Like, in fact, you can't, if you're in the COVID protocol, you shouldn't be seeing anybody. So my understanding by common sense is that whole week, he's not like touching weights or anything.
Yeah, I don't know if like, if you just can't work out, or if, you know, you're working out at the home gym, maybe that's more apt. You know, I don't think that it's necessarily restricting their ability to like do physical things. You just aren't like working out like at the gym or with your teammates and so on and so forth. That's my understanding, at least.
But what's a home gym for, like, you know, maybe in Detroit it might be different, but like I know in Miami, I mean, there's most of these players live in condos, right? They don't live in houses. They live, you know, in downtown Miami, by the arenas. Like, you know, I think Jimmy might live in Coconut Grove or whatever, you know, has a big house, but I'm pretty sure most of the players live, you know, near the arena in, you know, a condo. So I don't even know how much of a gym you can have in your house. You know,
yeah, what I mean? The situation in Detroit has changed since they moved from the Palace of Auburn Hills, which was, you know, half an hour outside of the city of Detroit and a fairly remote area. So like a lot of those guys had houses that were not too far away from the arena and the practice facility, which was like basically next door to the arena. Now the whole shebang has been moved to downtown Detroit. So like, you don't have guys living out in the fucking countryside, you know. Yeah. Stanley Johnson once was on, I think it was, I forget what the podcast was, but he was talking about like how, like, he wakes up in the morning and he looks out his back window and there's like a deer, like, you know, eating off of like trees in his backyard in the snow. You're not going to have that with these players on this team now, with everybody like situated in downtown Detroit. I think I heard that a bunch of the guys live in the same apartment building. Like, so I don't know if there's like a bunch
of
rookies in a condo or something like that. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what kind of, you know, in-home kind of like workout facilities they do have at their disposal. So it's very possible, like, you know, if you are in the the Pistons rookie dorms apartment building or whatever, you just can't work out if you're in
sounds protocol. Fun though.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
I know that Mario Chalmers and Gerald Green lived in the Marquee building right in front of the Epic here in Miami. Frankie, do you know why we know that?
Yes, I know why, of course.
Why? Duncan, have you ever heard the story?
I'm not sure.
Frankie, Gerald Green, sure. Famous Heat tenure.
I'm getting warmer. I think this is starting to ring a bell.
The Flocka?
Yeah, so Gerald Green was a member of the Miami Heat, believe it or not, for because it was such a short time. And he was having a, he had one of the most fantastic preseasons that we've seen. Hall of Fame
preseason. Yeah.
He looked incredible shooting the ball, highlight plays, everything. And so everybody's really excited about him. And then one, I don't remember what time, this felt very early in the season.
Yeah.
But there's just, a news story that Gerald Green has passed out and Mario Chalmers has was by his side and called
rescued
the
him.
Ambulance. And this, it's been immortalized by the Dan Le Batard show and Michael Ryan with the song when Mario got traded that season, and say, and one of the lines was, and goodbye Mario and thanks for saving Gerald Green's life.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was Gerald Green, but I do remember the story. It was like this sort of like amorphous story that didn't have names attached to it. But yeah, that, yeah, I remember that story.
It's so much better now, like we know he's okay.
Everyone's okay.
At the time, we're like, whoa, what happened to Gerald? What did he do? What did he get into?
Who among us has not passed out in the lobby of our building once or twice?
I don't know. Listen, it's in Miami, nonetheless. Come on.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. In Miami? You see people pass out in the lobby
of their Wednesday.
Buildings. That's benches. You know, you walk Wynwood, Frankie. You walk Wynwood, and there's, you know, people pass out on stairs, and they'll be fine. They'll get up.
That's tropical blankets territory. He picks them up, puts them in the Uber.
Shout out to Alex Toledo, Five on the Floor in Miami Heat. That's our guy. Duncan, we thank you so much for coming on the show today. We appreciate it. We hope to have you on again. We knew that when we had to talk Detroit Pistons, we went to you first.
Of course. Happy I'm your guy.
Why not? Most excited team in the league, Jeremy Grant and all. Yo, chat, thanks for coming out. Appreciate you. Remember, tomorrow, pregame show, 30 minutes before the game, hangover time postgame show. Right after at the buzzer, we have you live. We have tons of stuff coming. Remember, be patient with us. We're trying to roll everything out succinctly and organized, so we give you the best that we can. The love has been outrageous. I mean, like I said, we've done this for 8 years, and this year has been by far the most fruitful and the most fun. So, like, thank you guys for being so good to us, especially with our new streaming endeavor. It's very scary to try new things. Y'all are the best. So check out all our stuff that's going on. Rate and review the podcast. Duncan, where can people find you and your work? Because I do want people to go look and seek out what you do.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Duncan Smith NBA. All of my written work is at Hoops Habit, where I'm the site expert and running things over there. Just about like once or twice a day, I've got content coming up personally. And I also oversee a staff of about 40 writers, I think, right now. And so that's keeping me busy. And I also I also get to, you know, digest a lot of really good content from some really sharp writers on that site. So that's where I'm at these days.
By the way, shout out to Simon Smith. You mentioned him. Simon's a great Heat Twitter guy. Shout out to Simon. Yeah. He's awesome. Posted stats all the time. We love it. Keeps us informed. Frankie, I want to make it more of a habit to give her our Twitter handles, because some people might not know where to find us on Twitter. So where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Frankie_G. That's Frankie with a Y. And on Stream Beat Pod, our new spinoff podcast.
I hate you guys.
We're doing this. We are me, Alex, Tiffany, Siobhan, Joey, Chris, we're all doing we're doing a spinoff podcast. It came up as a joke. We were joking on the timeline, and then we started booking real guests.
Tell the people how it happened. Who's your first guest?
So we were talking. This happened the other night when the Heat Wizards game was postponed, and so somebody was mentioning to Alf that we should talk about WandaVision instead, since we can't have a hangover time. And we're like, yeah, we should just. You know, do this instead. It sounds so much more fun. And then Moose asked Adnan Verk, formerly of ESPN and host of his own podcast,
as a joke. He asked as a joke.
And Adnan said, sure, I can come on in March. And we've booked a couple other guests. So we're like, screw it. We got to do this now. Cooper Moorhead is going to join us.
What? Cooper? Cooper can't even come on this. So he won't
I know. That's why he was like, oh, since it's not Heat basketball, I think I can definitely do it. And so we're like, hell yeah, let's do this.
Just shoot shots left and right, man.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. And Gianni's supporting us, us spinning off. We're still all going to be a part of Heat Beat, of course, but just something else fun we can do and not get Thibodeau minutes and doing Heat Beat.
Duncan, these people had a goddamn mutiny. I went for a run. I thought I was like, okay, I'm new year, new me. We're gonna go for a run. We're doing this. I'm out of my run, and my phone is freaking like crazy. I was like, leave me alone. I just want Spotify. I don't want what y'all are doing. And I checked the chat, and apparently there's this thing called Stream Beat, and Adnan Verks involved. I was like, where did this come from? I was like, what's going on? And then Frankie hits me up. He's like, yo, can I call you? Like, I want to ask. Like, is this okay?
I just didn't want to offend him because like I don't want him to think we were leaving the pod or anything.
Yeah, don't get left behind.
This is like at 11 at night on a weeknight. I'm like in bed. I'm like watching TV and like Frankie is being like, yo, can I call you? Like, I gotta ask you some stuff. I was like, I mean, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, because G was kind of like G didn't know if we were serious or not. So I was like, no, G, we're serious. So this is really happening. I don't want to piss you off or anything or upset you or anything.
It sounded like a bit.
I'm gonna have Adnan Verk on my WandaVision podcast. Do you mind?
Yeah.
Listen, that's an A-lister. And then Duncan's a blue check, but Duncan's part of Blue Checkmark Twitter, so we got an A-lister here. Duncan, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. We hope to have you again sometime.
My pleasure. Anytime.